Hey, it's me, Penn Badgley, host of Podcrushed. We will be back next week with a brand new episode of your favorite Podcrushed. But today we've got something a little different for you. I want to introduce you all to one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called Funny Because It's True, and it's hosted by Elise Myers, whose name you might recognize because she was a guest on Podcrushed. And, you know, she's really blown up in her own right. Elise is incredibly authentic in an age of celebrities, influencers, actors. She really is, I think, a ray of light. And she's very, very, very funny, very relatable, extra. So today I'm sharing an episode of Funny Because It's True with Elise Myers. Take a listen, and we'll see you next week for a brand new episode of Podcrushed.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
What was my first kiss? Great question. I would love to tell you. I was lucky enough to share my first kiss with someone that like quickly became my best friend and favorite person, but it didn't actually end up happening until I was in the 10th grade. So to fully understand why this was such a big deal, we are going to have to go back to the 6th grade. He was one of those people that was so hot, but so nerdy all at the same time. And he knew it, but not in like a cocky way, just like a self-aware kind of way where he definitely knew he held the keys to literally every kingdom, but used them wisely. This was the man I had a crush on for like the majority of my life up until this point. But unfortunately, he did not have a crush on me. So we just became best friends. We end up transitioning from like a crusher, crushy type situation to like a full-blown best friendship. I'm talking movie marathons, epic walks, phone calls about gossip, photo shoots with someone's random digital camera, and like a pile of rocks in your neighborhood that you think look really artsy. The whole shebang. This went on for years, and there were moments where I was like, this is all I need. As time went on, feelings got like a little confusing. I liked him, then he liked me, then we liked each other, but we didn't want to. It was like the picture-perfect young adult coming-of-age love story. I literally couldn't have written it better if I tried. So after hearing, just date already, enough times from our close friends and family, we finally dated. Fine, we're dating. Reluctantly, we're dating. But the weirdest part was, it just wasn't weird. Because nothing changed. The thing that's like supposed to change, where you're like playing kissy face and finding excuses to be alone so you can like make out for as long as you can possibly hold your breath. Yeah, none of that existed because we simply really were just best friends. But after answering the same question over and over and over again with like, no, we haven't kissed yet. Thank you so much for asking. We just had to call a business meeting. Essentially, we just sat each other down and we were like, listen, this is not good for our brand. People are going to start wondering why we haven't kissed yet. We have to kiss at some point. Yes, we both agreed. It has to happen soon. So Valentine's Day rolls around, and we both decide this is a convenient time to have our first kiss. So we get dropped off to like a romantic pizza dinner by his parents, by the way. And when I tell you that no words were spoken at this dinner, no words, complete silence, just us eating pizza in silence. I don't think either of us could have fathomed talking about anything other than this, like this impending anxiety of us having our first kiss. But the only thing weirder than not talking at all would be to talk about your upcoming first kiss with the person you will literally be kissing sitting across the table from you. So it was radio silence as we munched on this pizza. His dad picks us up from dinner and drives us back to my mom's apartment where the kiss for sure will be going down. I know it. His dad knows it. Strangers like passing us on the street can probably tell that there will be having a first kiss in like the general vicinity. You can just feel it in the air. It's horrible. We get out of the car and we walk into the apartment complex. We ride up the elevator in complete silence, by the way. And I'm just like immediately regretting that my mom chose the apartment. That's like the furthest possible point from the elevator. That 45-second walk felt like an absolute eternity. We finally get to the door, and I think I say something out loud to the effect of like, well, here it is, the moment we've been waiting for. Without skipping a beat, he pulls chapstick out of his left pocket. He does a little spin move away from me and puts the chapstick on facing away, and then spins right back to me. By the way, that spin had like more finesse than I will ever know in my entire life. To buy us more time, he offered me chapstick, and I was so nervous. I think I like gestured towards it, like, nah, I'm trying to quit. Thank you so much. So finally, I just said out loud, okay, here it goes. I leaned in, because if I did not get this over with soon, I would be dying a human being that did not ever get kissed. It was now or never. It was never going to happen if it wasn't now. So I just leaned in, and our lips touched. We hold them for 2 seconds, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and we pull away. Boom, kissed. Was it great? I don't know. But we did it. And we did it 4 more times after that. And then we broke up because we don't really like kissing. And so, thank you. Hello, and welcome to my very first episode of Funny 'Cause It's True. I'm Elise Myers. We did it. I made the podcast, you found it, and we made it, and it's happening. And this is it right now. This is the first episode. And this is my theme song. Great. Okay, actually, can you just pretend that you're listening to a fully complete theme song here? I got really in my head, and I tried to make it perfect, and I couldn't. So this is going to be the theme song right here. Listen, this has been a journey, and I have been a little nervous and a little scared, but we're here, and I'm so happy about it, and I've already said it, but I'm going to say it again, it's happening. Whether we want it or not, it's happening. Okay, perfect. The process of this whole thing, doing things scared, that's what we're going to talk about. Each week on the show, I'm talking to comedians, pop culture icons, and people I think you just need to hear from about the not-so-funny moments that have become funny over time. Because I gotta say, when you're sitting across from one of your idols, sweating just huge pit stains in your favorite shirt, replaying the weird way you just asked a question, it is so nice to hear them talk about their own experience meeting their idols for the first time and the pit stains that they had on their favorite shirt. Because those awkward and hard moments that keep us up at night, we all have them. Lance Bass, he has them. Caitlin Bristow, she for sure has them. And we are going to hear them all. We're starting off with none other than Paul Feig. Paul is an author, a TV and movie mogul. He created the hit show Freaks and Geeks, directed episodes of The Office, Parks and Rec. He's the executive producer on episodes of the TV series Welcome to Flatch. And that's not it. You know Bridesmaids, that movie? Yeah, he directed that. His newest film, The School for Good and Evil, is coming out in October, and he's got a new book coming in November called Cocktail Time. Very excited about that. So you could say he's pretty busy. There are two things about this interview that are funny because they're true. Number one, I was in sweatpants. Paul, yeah, he was in a 7-piece suit. Did I know what a 7-piece suit was before I met him? Absolutely not. I Googled it later, but I nodded like I did. Number two, I completely derailed our conversation from the original outline I had to ask him questions about The Office. It actually turned out way better than anything I originally planned. Perfect. Okay, so with that, let's just get into it. Okay, Paul Feig, hi, how are you?
I'm good, Elise. How are you? It's good to talk to you.
I'm good. For those that don't know, Paul Feig is actually the creator and owner of Powder Keg, who produces my podcast. And so, first, Paul, I just actually wanted to say thank you, because it's really cool that you took a chance on me. And it's awesome to be here.
It's easy to take a chance on you because you're awesome.
Thank you. This week, we're kind of chatting about disastrous dates.
Yes.
And I know you mentioned a little bit about Freaks and Geeks, and I know that history of that show is very closely based on your experience with your life and your childhood. And I would honestly just kind of love to hear your backstory with dating, crushing. Like, what kind of person were you when you fell in love and had a crush on people?
Well, I mean, I fell in love very easily.
Did you?
Okay. I constantly had crushes, but I was such a chicken, I never talked to the people I had crushes on.
Okay, you're my people. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, totally. So it's all from afar, and of course, you know, the whoever's unattainable because of, you know, it's funny, like the idea that people are unattainable back then is so clear to you, you know, but as you get older, you're like, oh, you know, it's always that thing. You always hear people go to their reunion and you find out that, you know, the girl you were in love was like, I was in love with you too. It's like, what? Although I do think that's a myth sometimes.
And also you realize like they're just people too. When you meet them 10 years later, you're like, oh, you're not as cool as I thought you were. Or like, yes. Oh, you're kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Okay, pause. Completely contradictory to what I just said. I actually do not believe my own self here. I for sure would go back to school and be just as terrified of everybody as I was when I was in school with them. This like magical air of confidence would not sweep over me, and I would not suddenly think that they are just normal people the way that they really are. I still would be nervous around them. Okay, keep playing.
Oh, no, everything I thought was cool about you is actually what makes you somebody I would probably break up with the minute we actually had a relationship.
Totally.
But I was really into kind of showering people with gifts, you know.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I thought I could buy love, you know, which is, that's a really healthy attitude. Yeah. So I remember when I was in junior high, our class was weird. They would set up two classes on opposite sides of this big room. So we were facing each other, the two classes. And there's this one girl I was just in love with, you know, never had the nerve to talk to her, but told my mom at one point, like, oh, I'm in love with this girl. And she's like, oh, and she pulls out this bracelet. She's like, this was my grandmother's and she gave it to me. You know, and it's a very special, and if you have a girl you love, I want you to give this to her.
Oh my gosh.
She just assumed it was somebody I knew.
Right, not a stranger that you thought was like cute from afar.
Totally. So I wrapped it up in a piece of paper and I left it on her desk before anybody
got
in.
Not even to give it, you just let her find it?
Oh yeah, totally. This, like, with like a note. Yeah. I really like you. Blah, blah, blah. And
oh my gosh.
I remember sitting there and she came in late. And so everybody's like there and I'm just staring. My heart's pounding. And she sits down and she looks at this thing. She opens up, looks at it. She looks across at me. I look down immediately.
Oh my
gosh. And never look up again. And then she never says anything to me about it.
Did she keep the bracelet?
Of course she did. I never saw that bracelet
again. No, you are joking me right now. You did not give a family. Oh, okay, it makes sense though, because your mom sounds like she was a gift giver. So then she passed it to you and there she was like, be a gift giver. That's like what you did every time you liked someone. Were you like, I'm just going to find your favorite thing, buy it for you and hope that you like me?
Yeah, total. Oh, God, I did. The dumbest. I still cringe when I think about this. I think I was a freshman in high school.
My
lab partner in science class was this girl, and I was in love with, different girl.
Sure.
And she, at the time, there was an Olivia Newton-John song called I Honestly Love You. And that was, we were talking, because we were actually kind of friendly. And so she was like, oh, I love that song. It's my favorite song. I wanted to buy the single. This is back when you bought singles.
Yes.
And she was like, well, I can't afford it. So I'm like, I'm in.
Ding.
Yep. So I go and I buy this single for her. And so I show up the next day and I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I got this for you. And she's like, oh, my God. And she's so happy. She kisses me on the cheek, which if you're like you and I who fall in love so easily, that's like literally like, you know.
We're married.
Just proposed marriage. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think that we are one now.
Oh, no. I'm telling you. So I play completely cool. I'm like, hey, hey. But then I go home and that night I'm like, oh, I can't just let this go. I write a note to her saying, hey, I just want to say thanks for the kiss. It really meant everything to... Oh, my God.
No.
Can you imagine? So the next day, I give her the note.
I love you.
And she reads it, and then she's weird.
I honestly love you.
And then she's never not weird with me for the rest of the time that we're in school.
So it was just a thank you kiss? It wasn't like,
totally.
I like you. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It was just, oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, like a brotherly, sisterly kiss on the cheek. Yeah.
Would you consider that your first kiss?
Yeah, I would actually. I would. Right on my cheek.
My heart. So that was kind of your thing. You were like, I just have crushes and anybody that like pays me attention is like the person that I like. That was me as a kid. My type, if you look at the history of people that I've dated, no one can really figure out like what my type is. And I think it's just that if you like me, I like you. That was kind of what it was when I was younger. I think I just was so like hungry for somebody to be like, you are so cool. And I'm like, you know what? I think you're cool too. Let's date. And then it was always like a few months. And and then it wouldn't work because it wasn't the person. Then you'd move on and do it all over again.
Yeah.
But gifts were not my thing, I will say. I really struggle with receiving gifts. I always get really awkward about it. And I'm like, oh my God, someone spent money on this. This is so uncomfortable. And so it's really interesting. We are very different in that way.
Sadly, I had the shallow boy thing of like, oh, I like her because she's got blonde hair, she's got this, she got whatever. But the minute you did find out that somebody had a crush on you, all that went out the window, and it didn't matter what they look like. It's like, what, that person likes me?
No, this person likes me. Yeah, standards are high until it gets down to it, and you're like, oh, wait, actually, I'm just going to want someone that wants me.
Oh, no, totally.
And am I right in remembering that this is what the first episode of Freaks and Geeks is based off of, correct?
No, that was based on when I was a freshman. I was in love with the head cheerleader, of course, as you will.
Oh,
be.
My gosh.
Yeah. It, you know, but again, from afar. I never even talked to her. I just liked it. She was so I thought she was so pretty.
Right.
And so finally, the day of the homecoming, I'm like, I should ask her to the homecoming dance.
Oh, no.
Like, you know, clearly she's got a day. So I worked up the nerve to go up and ask her. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. But, you know, Bill asked me like a month ago. Like, oh, okay. But I'm just like, but I did it. And it's kind of this celebration. I did it. So that's in the opening, the pilot episode of Freaks and Geeks.
So people that don't know the story of Freaks and Geeks, like, what would you kind of describe in like a couple sentences? Like what the goal of that show was?
It was to do a show about the people I knew in high school, which was all the burnouts I was like nerds or geeks. I don't really like that. We were just like the awkward, underdeveloped kids, you know.
Yeah.
Because there's the mature kids who are making out in the hallways.
Yes.
You know, and then the jocks. And yeah, then there was the burnouts and us, and they were outsiders and we were outsiders. So we all kind of met in drama class. So it really just did a show about that because I got tired of watching all these high school show, quote unquote, high school shows that were about like, they were like soap operas and everybody's cool with having sex and all these relationship problems. I was like, we're just trying to get through the day without getting beat up, you know?
So real quick, I have never related to anything more than what Paul just said. I was the most uncomfortable human being from birth until like 18 years old. And so the fact that Paul wanted to highlight that feeling in school and in his show, like, I really appreciate that. And honestly, the first time I ever saw the show Freaks and Geeks, it was when I just had graduated high school. And I remembered saying out loud to the person that introduced me to the show, I wish I would have seen this show when I was in school because it would have made me feel a lot less alone. And to hear literally the creator of that show explain to me that that's pretty much the whole point of why he created it. Like, that was really powerful for me. And I don't think I was able to fully wrap my head around it as it was happening. But hearing this, like, yeah, that was just a much bigger moment than I think I really realized as it was happening. Okay. How much of that show was actually your story? Like, did you, like, it was a lot of the episodes just like your experience?
Well, the show was set up as, you know, it basically is a story of Sam and Lindsay, who were brother and sister. I was an only child. So Sam's stories all really kind of mirrored my experience, but I always wished I had an older sister. That was like dream. Yeah, I just was like, if I had a cool older sister, that would be the greatest. So when I created the show, I invented an older sister for myself.
So you got to like live the life you wanted to as a kid through that.
Yeah, totally. Oh, no, totally.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and then I based, you know, what happened was I set it up, you know, kind of based on what, how I grew up and all the people I knew. But then when we brought writers on, we did this 2-week little, you know, session before we actually started writing where I wrote up a big questionnaire of like, what's the craziest thing that happened to you in high school? Who did you love? Who did you hate? And everybody filled it out. We spent 2 weeks just telling stories, embarrassing stories. And that's where we culled all the stories for the first season from.
Wow. How many writers wrote on that show?
We had a lot. We had like 10, I think we had 10 or even a couple more in the writer's room. Yeah.
Do you find, like, I've always been curious to know kind of what goes on in a writer's room, but like from your experience being on that show, what was that like? How much input does everybody actually have at once? Hold on. Before the Paul Feig answers this question, I completely intentionally derailed this whole conversation from talking about disastrous dates to hearing his experience as a writer on his show, because why the hell not? I love writing. I love the idea of being in a writer's room, which also it scares me deeply. And if you asked me to be in one, I'd probably say no three times before I said yes. But like, was it the right question to ask? Yeah, absolutely. It's my podcast. So, okay, perfect. What was that like? How much input does everybody actually have at once?
I had a hard time with it. I mean, I loved everybody and it was cool. But I was, you know, when we first started the show, I said to Judd Apatow, who was my friend and who, you know, produced it with me, I was like, let's just write them all. We don't need a writing staff. And he's like, he loves writing staff. So he's like, we got to get people in there for ideas. I was like, okay. So, but I was never good at, you know, there's a thing that happens in writers' rooms where basically they put the script up and then you put it up on the screen and then the head writer kind of goes through and go, let's top this joke, you know, and they kind of go through and you write as a group and then people pitch ideas and pitch jokes and all that. I can never do that because I'm so kind of in my own head when I write. So I would kind of be writing and then I'd run in whatever episode I was writing and then I'd run in like to them and go like, I'm stuck on this, and they'd pitch a bunch of ideas. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'd like run away.
Okay. this is it right here. Paul would need a couple quick ideas, get them from all of the very talented people. He would receive those ideas and he'd be like, great, now literally shut up and don't talk to me. That is me. The idea that Paul had the right people around him and respected his process as well, where he could come in, get their input, and he could then walk out and do what he does alone and have it be that back and forth, like, that was really inspiring to me because that showed me that there was another way to do it. It doesn't have to just be in front of people 24/7 all the time. It can be both. It can be together and it can be separate. Okay, now we're pausing for a break. And then I'm going to ask Paul about another show that I love, The Office.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
As an Office fan, I really need to know, what did your experience in the writer's room look like with The Office compared to Freaks and Geeks?
Well, The Office was, I had started.
You just produced.
No, I was a director on it, and I directed, you know, over the course of the series, like 19 episodes.
Yeah.
But I was always, I knew all the writers, and I was friendly with them. Because I had done Freaks and Geeks, I had a little more cred in a writer's room, but I still wasn't part of the writers. But then at like the fifth season, I directed so many episodes, they said, do you want to come on as a co-executive producer? I said, I'll do it if I can also be in the writer's room officially. And so they said, sure. So, but what was interesting is, you know, I came in, I was my late 30s then. And it was a pretty young, you know, 20 something, you know, Mindy Kaling and, you know, Lee and Gene and all these amazing people who've gone on to such great stuff. Mike Schur.
Oh, yeah.
We're all in there. So they were kind of late 20s, early 30s. So I was kind of the old guy going in a little bit.
Interesting.
And yeah, but I kind of went, you go in, it's so funny. This is why I always lecture to comedy people, like, you've got to, like, stay current. If you start going like, Don't tell me what's funny. I know what's funny. You are dead.
Totally.
And so I get in this room, and I remember the one point they were pitching, you know, they had some joke, like, can we top this? And everybody's pitching the jokes. And I'm sitting there like the cat, the canary, because, you know, you have certain joke areas. You go like, this is my, I kill every time.
Yes.
So I'm sitting there like, I got the joke. I'm going to destroy this room full of young writers who think they know what they're doing. Comes around to me. I pitch this joke. They stare at me and I go, oh my God, I just pitched a dad joke.
And do you remember the joke?
No, I purged it out of my head.
Want to remember that.
No, it just like, and you're like, oh no. But it was the greatest lesson I ever had to keep my career moving forward is like, don't, because then somebody else pitched a joke that was not that dissimilar from mine, but the way they worded it and the attitude of it was a much, I hate to say, but younger way to do it. It's a much more contemporary way to do it versus like a dad take on something.
I feel like so much of writing is in the comedy space or in general is just kind of swallowing your pride. Like,
yeah,
I've walked into so many situations where I've literally just said like, die, Elise, die. Like, because I can't. Okay, that sounds so dramatic. Die, Elise, die just basically means like, don't let my pride matter more than making something beautiful or funny. It's just so interesting, like, to hear you go into the office after being so successful on Freaks and Geeks, to go into the office writers' rooms and just those meetings and feel like you're just going to crush it and then you don't. Like, that's wild to me, because I would think that as a successful writer, you could walk into any room and be like, I'm going to own this and it's going to be great.
Yeah. What I could have done and what I've seen older writers do is, no, it's funny. Like they don't believe, they just think everybody else doesn't get it.
It's just wild to me how people are so turned off to feedback.
No, everybody creative is defensive in their own way, you know, and some are just like, don't tell me. And others are like, you know, I think you and I are much more in the vein of like, we just wilt, you know, all my confidence goes out the door. Like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Perfect. I'm horrible at this. I'll never do it again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm out.
Heard that, sister. That's literally my response when someone gives me feedback. As I'm like, get feedback. It's so important. Someone gives me feedback and I'm like, all right, well, I'm the absolute worst, so I quit.
Especially as a comedy director, the thing I had to learn the most was I have to be confident enough to not be confident. You know, so you basically have to go in going like, I know what I'm doing. I know it's right. But then when somebody goes like, oh, what about this? What about this? Go like, oh, yeah. Or they go like, I don't know. That doesn't work for me, but if I do it this way, to then not go like, no, do it the way I wrote it.
Totally.
Go like, oh, yeah, cool. Like, let's try it. And my whole thing is just like, let's try everything. Try it the way I did it. I said, try it the way you said. Try it other ways. Because then I get in the editing room. That's when I sort it all out.
I am in real time having a you were right moment. So this voiceover that I am literally doing right this moment that you are hearing with your ears is the exact result of taking feedback and doing something that you're like, look, I don't think this is going to work, but we're just going to go for it. This voiceover is just a conscious stream of consciousness. No, let me go back. This voiceover is just a stream of consciousness. I'm not editing it. I'm not going back, except for the fact that I literally just went back. And my producer, Claire, was like, hey, you did a voiceover last time, and I can tell you edited it. And I'm like, I did edit it. And she's like, don't do that. And I'm like, I will do that. She's like, don't. Just try not. Just try not doing that. So this is me basically trying to prove her wrong, and I ended up proving her right. And that's beautiful.
Look, I turned 60 this year, so it never changes. Like, I'm the same insecurity. I know that I'm going to start a project all excited. I'm going to get into, like, the middle of the first half of the second act and start to waver. I'm going to get to the middle of the script and go, this is terrible. I should stop, freak out, push myself past, suffer through the second half of the second act. And then suddenly when I get the third act, write it in like 3 days, you know? So
and I just like, this know is the now. Best thing I've ever done. And like just 2 days ago, you were like, I'm horrible at this.
Oh no, totally. And then I'll read it all and go like, this is terrible. But, so you just got to, you have to know yourself well enough to go like, just plow forward.
This is so wild, dude. Okay. Literally like days before this interview, I just posted a video about my creative process, which I'm going to pull it up because I don't even want to get it word for word wrong. I'm going to pull this up so that you can hear just how wild it is that he just said that. Hold on. Hold, please. The first part of the creative my creative process is, like, you have an idea, right? Next is, I am the actual worst. I quit. I'll give it one more shot. I can do this. I am doing this. I need more coffee. I am good at this. And then it starts all over again. I am the actual worst. And so for him to say that that's basically his exact process as well was like, okay, this actually never gets easier. You just get more experienced at feeling those exact feelings. And I don't know if that's comforting or not, but what I do know is that it's time for a break.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Is there any other date that you wanted to talk about?
So, you know, I would cherry pick girls I had crushes on based on their behavior in school. And to be quite frank about this, there was a girl who, a friend of mine had a girlfriend, and they would make out in the hallway all the time. Remember, there's always like the couple that would make
always,
out all the time.
Just touching constantly.
Totally. So that was them. So, of course, she wasn't like normally the kind of, just physically the person I would go for, but it's just like the fact that she was so clearly, you know, open to that. It's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, like if I could ever be kissing a girl in the hallway, I'd be so cool. And you know, that looks so, you know, nobody looks more appealing than when they're kissing somebody else, you know?
Definitely. Hard agree. I definitely do not hard agree, but I didn't really know what to say there.
And then there was a Christmas dance.
You're like, it's my time.
Yeah, so I actually worked up the nerve in 10th grade, which I never had, to ask her to the Christmas, because I was still kind of friendly with her. And I was like, you want to go to the Christmas dance? She's like, oh, I love that, blah, blah. Oh, my God. So I have a date for the Christmas dance. I go to pick her up, and she was really pretty in just this really natural way. Well, this was like the 70s, the late 70s, which was disco and all that cuss. So I go to pick her up at her house. She comes down the stairs. I don't know what happened. Like, clearly she worked with her mother or sister, whatever. She's got a face full of makeup that is crazy.
Good
her
or bad?
Hair, bad. I mean, like kabuki, you know. and their hair, which was normally this kind of soft, it was almost like a Dorothy Hamill-y kind of thing, which Dorothy Hamill-ish. It's an old reference. Look it up, kids.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, it was a very distinct look based on an ice skater who was in the Olympics.
Paul Feig is being a gentleman here. What he's not saying is, and I Googled it later because I did not know who Dorothy Hamill was, he's describing a bowl cut. But he's a very kind person and he wouldn't say that. So I will say it. He was describing a bowl cut.
But she had taken and styled it up so it literally was just up like a helmet, like an umbrella had been opened on her head.
Okay, not so much of a gentleman that he didn't describe someone's hair like an umbrella, but enough of a gentleman that he wouldn't say bowl cut. Okay. I need to stop saying okay every time I end a recording. So this is me ending the recording without saying the word that I don't want to say.
So she comes down. So immediately I'm like, oh, that's, is that her? Like,
oh,
who is
no.
this person who's not soft and I don't know. There's something like lovely about her softness that I,
right.
I now this is a really hard looking person comes down. So, okay, but fine. Okay, you know, I'm no prize, trust me. So I was like, okay. So we get in the car. Her friends are going to drive. And her friends are in the front seat. They're a couple. And the minute we pull out of her driveway, her girlfriend goes like, who wants a beer? And she's like, me. And she reaches over the seat and grabs it and just guzzles this beer. Like, gone in just like a flash. And all I can think is I'm insulted because I'm like, So you really needed that drink that badly because you're on this date
with
me?
You just needed to be drunk to be on a date with me.
Yeah, and I couldn't compute. And I kind of didn't drink at that time. And so I just, they're like, you want a beer? I was like, not really. And then she chugs another one. I mean, she has like three beers before we get to the dance. So we're at the dance. Yes. And then, so the dance is going okay. And she's kind of floating around other people and all this. And we kind of dance, but we kind of don't. And then she's off with girlfriends. And then like an hour into the dance, the friend who drove us, she comes in. She goes like, Paul, she's really sick. She's really sick in the bathroom. She's throwing up all over the place. I'm like, well, I'm out. I have nothing to do with this. But of course, and she's like, she feels so terrible. She likes you so much, and she feels so terrible. You know, and we're just, you know, she's almost back to normal. Okay.
Oh my gosh, did she really like you, or was her friend just fronting in this moment?
I don't know. I think probably in her drunkenness, she's like, oh, I like, you know, I
this
who
is
knows?
So sad.
It's such sad. Teen drinking and under quite a love. So finally she comes out of the bathroom and she's, you know, she was wearing this kind of silky dress and she's got like water stains all down the front, which clearly had been vomit cleaned off of this dress.
No.
And comes up to me and does this thing where she like gets right up next to me in my face. And all I can think, I was a germaphobe. All I can think is like, you've been throwing up. Your mouth is filled with throw up. I don't want to be near you. Don't breathe on me. And of course, then she's romantic and she's like, we have to slow dance. And it's just, I'm literally just trying to avoid her mouth. And
she's like, I feel better now. Let's party. And you're like, yeah. I just want this date to be over.
Yeah. I cannot get out of here. But of course, being a high school dance, then we had reservations to eat at a steakhouse, you know.
And after?
Then, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. We go to this steakhouse, which I'd been wanting to go to. One of those ones has like a giant, like fake cow in front.
What steakhouse was it?
Well, oh God. This was
Morton's
in Michigan.
Or
this
something?
This was like, you know, middle suburban Michigan.
Oh, love it. Okay. Michigan. Yeah, got it.
JJ's, you know, steer house or something like that.
Great.
So then she orders a giant steak with onions on it. So she's pounding down the steak and onions. And all I can think in my head is the reason I went on this date is so I could make out with this girl.
And she's making it very impossible for you to do this.
There's throw up, there's onions, there's steak going on in there. I think possibly a Caesar salad was thrown into the mix.
Oh, love the anchovies.
Yes, exactly. So, okay, so date's over. We're driving. I'm like, oh, I got to get home. My dad's going to kill me. I'm just like, get me the fuck out of here. So, so we pull into the driveway and through the window, our living room window, it's open a crack enough. I see my father sitting watching television. All I want to do is go watch TV with my dad. I got to get out of this car. So they stop the car. The people in the front who drove start making out immediately, which was apparently the cue of like, well, you guys got to make out too. So I turn to this girl and I'm like, I got to get out of here. I got to do the kiss. So I go in for my first French kiss ever.
No.
I have no idea what it is. I just know at some point you're supposed to put your tongue in somebody's mouth. So we go in. She opens her mouth. I open my mouth and literally shove my tongue into her mouth. Don't know what I'm doing. Hit her teeth.
No.
And literally run my tongue around her top teeth and then around her bottom teeth.
No.
And then come out of it. And she comes out of it, and she's looking at me like either it was the greatest kiss ever or the most horrifying thing that ever happened to her.
Absolutely not. No. I have nothing to add to this other than adding to the disdain of this moment that I already had. I would just like to make it very clear that this is a big absolutely not for me.
It's definitely the most horrifying thing that ever happened to me up to that point.
I have chills from the secondhand embarrassment right now, Paul. I am dying.
It's terrible. And so I just like, oh, thanks a lot. I'll see you on Monday. And just out of the car and, oh, God. And went in and immediately brushed my teeth.
A scale from 1 to 10, how would you rate that first kiss?
About a minus 50, I think.
Okay. And could you taste the onions?
Yeah, I could taste everything. Yeah, oh, you could smell the throw up. You could taste the onions.
No.
You could taste the steak. Oh, my God. It was
I really appreciate the dedication, though, because you really just committed to that. You were like, I came here for one thing, and I'm not leaving without it.
Well, I didn't, again, in my people pleaser mode is like, well, I can't disappoint her, like, clearly.
I think that me and Paul are the same person. He's just a much fancier dressed version than I am.
She kind of, I could tell she felt bad. And so that was kind of her way to make up for I don't know. It was just everybody's intentions were right or maybe not. I don't know. But
sure.
It all was just went horribly wrong.
So you went from kissing on the cheek to just that. There was nothing. That was just straight in.
Oh, yeah. Literally. There was nothing. It was 0 to 60.
Oh.
But this was 4 years, at least 4 years between the, or no, I guess, oh no, was it like 3 years? I actually think that I'd honestly love you kiss on the cheek was eighth grade. So I'm going to give myself two years on that.
That is wild.
Well, you and I, we have good stories. Because here's why my theory on why we have good stories that are all horrifying to other people, because we are optimists. We are eternal optimists. And when you're an optimist, you just get your ass kicked constantly. Because
Absolutely.
You go like, today's going to be great. I know every other day was terrible. Today's the day it's going to be great. And you go into these situations with too much expectation, but I never want to change. I do it to this day and I will never stop doing it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I am a people pleaser and an optimist. And those two are a horrifying combination when you have anxiety. Well, thank you so much, Paul. It's been such an honor to talk to you and chat with you and hear your life stories. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Lacey. You're the best. Bye.
That was the interview. I am a people pleaser. I don't know how else to explain that way of thinking other than like the desire to give people multiple chances because I want them to be the best version of themselves, even at the expense of me, which is not healthy, but it's just how I operate. So I think that I would actually categorize myself not as an like optimist as much. I have like a lot of belief in people. I don't always have that same optimism and belief in myself, which is just wild that I can believe so deeply in strangers. But when it comes to like believing in myself, I'm like, I can't do it. I've known this person for 7 seconds and I think they can conquer the world, but I've known me for 28 years and I'm like, nah. This process was pretty overwhelming for me. I think this whole process has been, I don't know if this interview specifically kind of triggered that in me of like being afraid of doing a podcast or if kind of it had been brewing from the first conversation I had with somebody up until this point. But I felt very nervous throughout the entire conversation and like I wasn't doing it right. And even though this is literally my own podcast, I felt like somehow I was doing it wrong. Which is impossible because we're making it up as we go. I think that it's just been very confronting for me to try and do something new in such a public way. It's no longer just me with a camera in my room alone. It's me in front of an entire team of people watching me do something new for the very first time. And it's very, very like overwhelming and emotional and incredible and scary and stretching, and it's been really cool and a lot all at the same time. And so I was really grateful for Paul's wisdom and advice, even when he didn't realize he was giving it to me. I think that it was really good for me to hear that you always are going to feel like an imposter, that you're never going to feel confident in yourself. Just be confident enough to not be confident, I think is the way he said it. And I thought that was very wise. And I'm going to write that down and tape it up to my wall right in front of my desk because I think I need a lot more of that gray area in my life than I allow right now. Okay, that's it. Episode 1 down. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Funny 'Cause It's True. There is a second one in your feed at this very second. It's my interview with Lance Bass. You can listen right now. And there will be so many more to come. If you like the show, give it 5 stars. If you love the show, leave a review. That helps people find us. All right, I'll be back next week with more. Bye. Funny 'Cause It's True is a Lemonada Media and Powder Keg production. The show is produced by Claire Jones, Zoe Dennis, and Linnea Tony. Our associate producer is Tiffany Bowie. Rachel Neal is our senior director of new content, and our VP of weekly production is Steve Nelson. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova Kramer, Paul Feig, Laura Fisher, Kesla Childers, and me, Elise Myers. The show is mixed by Brian Castillo and Johnny Evans. Our theme song music was written by me and scored by Xander Singh.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.